Australia. How are you going? That's right, it's NBA Australia. It's Friday, TGIF, am I right? May 28th, I'm your host James Clements here in lockdown in Larry Armour Studios, but still working hard, keeping you completely up to date and giving you the lowdown, all the ins and outs of the NBA playoffs. That's what we do here while we rep Australia a bit. Oh, geez. We don't take things too seriously around here, though, do we?
No, we don't, Jimmy.
Well spotted. But we are going to wrap up day six of the playoffs for you today. The first run of game threes to talk about, which is kind of nice. And we've got a special guest. That's right, I promised it all week. Former NBA player, NBL MVP, NBL champ, all-round Aussie legend, Chris Anstey. He's on the show to talk about the playoffs, lockdown, his new book, a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a great chat with Chris. And we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff in the game wraps as well. As well as That's Not an Eye for Mate, No Mate, Spud of the Night, Better Than Lonzo Ball. We've got Yeah Nails, we've got the Unpopular Opinion today, we've got Outback Takehouse, where we're serving up a flame grilled take, and we'll preview every single game on the weekend, which will be pretty bloody good. Seriously, there's a lot of games, they're pretty awesome, I'm excited. And we'll finish up with a cooking with Bainesy for you, just to finish off your week the right way. Yeah, it'll be fun. Right, let's get into it then, shall we? Episode 621 of NBA Australia. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
You better watch out for the consequences of your own actions if you're an idiot fan out there. Because, boy, howdy, did we cop a run of shitty fan showings yesterday. So, obviously, the popcorn incident we talked about yesterday was pretty wildly broken down. But as mentioned, it did look like a fan spat on Trae Young in the Knicks game. And turns out he did, and he's now being banned. And also, very annoyingly and shittily, been in a surprise to fucking nobody who's ever been to Utah. Vernon Maxwell, what's up? Three fans got kicked out of Grizzlies Utah as well for saying bad shit to Ja Morant's family. Oh, geez. Anyway, you should also watch out for the Shaq attack if you're Kenny the Jet Smith. He got just smoked by Shaq, talking about who the bloke who will tell you what's what on your team was. Kenny's like, that was me. Yeah, it was always me. And Shaq's like, no, it wasn't. It was Vernon Maxwell. Shut up. And Charles jumped on me as well. That was fun to see. I do love a bit of inside the NBA when they're not just complaining about the state of today's basketball. Right, let's start today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia with the Daily Whip Around. That's right, the fans, as mentioned, that Knicks fan did spit on Trae Young, and he's been banned from MSG. Sucked in, dickhead. Trae Young, very coolly, was just like, hey, man, I'm not going to press charges or anything. But also, come on, man, put your fucking mask on. Also, grow up. Ugh. And on top of Popcorn Fuckwit, who was banned by the Wells Fargo Center Philly folks, the three fans who were kicked out of Utah Grizz have also been banned, which is kind of nice. At the same time, what do we expect? This is the first time fucking we've had fans back in the arenas. Everyone's just completely forgotten how to act in public, apparently. What is going on in your heads?
Oh, man, I've been cooped up for like 12 months, man. It's been this pandemic. I'm a bit stressed out.
That doesn't give you license to act like a fucking idiot. What are you doing? Grow up. So there was a great tweet about someone sitting right near Ja Morant's family saying, shit, Morant's family is sitting a couple sections over. There's a ton of security there. Some fans have been dicks to them. I think stuff got heated. Now the whole family's leaving as well. And yeah, it turns out some of the shit they were saying is a bit on the nose. Pretty fucky. And the Utah Jazz, in a surprise twist, keep on having to do this with fans, don't they? So weirdly enough, on the same day that that's all going off, we got news from Woj that, remember that dickheaded fan who was saying the same sort of shit to Rusty Westbrook there? In surprise, surprise, Utah. A judge threw out a $100 million suit from that idiot.
Oh, man, we got banned from Utah Jazz games for life because we were saying, like, racist and sexist stuff to, like, Russell Westbrook, but we're going to sue for $100 million. Oh, Americans. They're all fucking idiots, aren't they?
That is amazing.
$100 million. That's how much defamation infliction of emotional stress has been caused rated.
You idiot, Shane Kiesel and Jennifer Huff. You morons. What are you doing? Allegedly, that's who you are. Dummies. Dummies everywhere. And the final little bit of weird news that popped off today. Danny Ainge. So responding to Kyrie Irving's like, hey, man, look, I just want to go up to Boston, go in there, play, and let's, you know, not have folks getting belligerent and racist and stuff. Danny Ainge's like, hey, man, 26 years, I've never heard anyone be racist in Boston. It's like, Danny, you're lying. Danny, what are you doing? Who did you ask? Oh, man, I've never heard any of the, like, no player's ever spoken to me about hearing racist stuff in Boston. Danny, who did you talk to? Larry Bird? Kevin McHale? Greg Steamsma? John Havlicek? How fucking high are you? It's Boston. Literally every fucking baseball game you go to, it's just like a fucking non-stop goddamn avalanche of it. Which is horrifying. You go to any bar, and it's just like, wait, is that guy just over there being super casually super fucking racist? Oh, God. Anyway, the fact is, Danny Ainge going, hey, man, none of the players that I've played with or, you know, been here for 26 years with have ever said anything about it. And then it's like, Danny, Marcus Smart literally wrote an article in the Players' Tribune about it, about how, like, the lady was wearing a Boston jersey and she turned around and said, F you, you effing N-word, to Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart then came out as well after Kyrie said this and said, yeah, I've heard it. I've heard a couple of things. It's hard to hear that and then have them support us as players. It's kind of sad and sickening. Yeah, it is. Who's fucking racist in this day and age? You fucking mouth-breathing idiot. Unbelievable. You got to be a special type of fucking stupid to be racist. So good on Marcus Smart for, you know, basically backing up Kyrie and going, yeah, I don't want to hear that shit because we shouldn't have to hear that. Like, nobody should be out in public. So you shouldn't even be saying that shit in private. You're a fucking idiot if you're racist. Like, that's a pretty cut and dry kind of vibe. What Marcus Smart is basically saying is that he wants it to be respectful when, you know, the games actually happen there. And pretty much that's all we ask for, isn't it? Just a bit of respect. And that's what Ja Morant's dad is kind of, like, alluding to here as well. He was talking about it. It's like, look, we've been heckled before. Heckling's fine. This wasn't a heckling. And good on him for calling it out and getting the, you know, the abusive fans kicked out. And, yeah, I mean, just makes damn sense, doesn't it? And the last bit of news, Glenn Taylor. Look, this is just the saga of the Wolves saga. Glenn Taylor is like, look, I'm not going to talk about ongoing legal proceedings, but just safe to say, the Wolves and Lynx will not be moving. It's like, all right, you look like a fucking microwave dish of mashed potato. So we should all definitely trust that guy. Right, let's do some game wraps.
Game wraps.
They're brought to you by DraftKings Australia. The playoffs are here. Get stuck into daily fantasy. It's the most fun ever. Our boys from down under are battling it out. Jingles, Big Simo, Ben Simmons, Matty T, old mate Joshy Green. And thanks to our friends at DraftKings Australia, you can get in the action as well. Take on the competition. And if you think you've got what it takes to take home millions in prizes, then you better get around DraftKings Australia. That's right. You can create your own new DraftKings Australia account by clicking on any of the links on our website, on our socials, etc. It'll take you to a lobby, check out a contest, pick your players, get stuck in, sit back, watch them go. It's great fun. So go to DKNG. That's DKNG.co/Straya and get right into it. /Straya. That's all you have to do now. Love that link. We got the link sorted out. Anyway, so go check it out. Daily Fantasy is awesome. Your regular season fantasy is all Dunskies. Daily Fantasy is the best way to go about playoff fantasy. So go check it out. Get your picks in before the game start. Have a crack. What are you waiting for? Get right around it. Enter now. DraftKings Australia. NBA Australia. That's what we're all about here. Right, the three games today. Game threes. Milwaukee beat the piss out of Miami 113-84. Gave them the clamps in the first half. It was super impressive. Milwaukee, look, even though their offense struggled and their D was insane, they kept the Heat at like 30% shooting in the first half. The Heat made 4 threes in the first half. Jimmy Butler made 2 of them. He's a dude who doesn't shoot threes. You're in trouble. They were down 13 at the half. Jimmy Butler had 6 of 12 from the floor. The rest of the Heat combined went 8 of 33. Ugh. They scored 36 points and a half of basketball in the year of our Lord 2021. Ugh. And that was the problem. Look, there was many problems about this broadcast. A lot of it was TNT. Marv breathing heavily into the microphone. And it's like, ah, fuck me. But they just kept talking about Miami's defense. It's like, homie, they've just dropped 36 points and a half. It's not Miami's defense is struggling. Bam didn't look good. Butts didn't look good. None of the role players looked good. This was an absolute shit show for the Miami Heat. They looked gassed. They looked dunsky. And the second half did not get any better. The Bucks just ran over the top of them. The Bucks were the exact opposite. They were firing on all cylinders, not to the point they were in Game 2. But this was the exact sort of middle ground between Milwaukee's Game 1 and Game 2, and it was still dominating. So, look, the Heat, the defense kept them to 37% shooting. They went 9 of 32 from downtown, had 15 turnovers. Butts had 19 points. He hit one more shot the rest of the game in that second half. It was brutal to watch. He was a minus 26. Bam! Had 17, 8, and 4. But was just in, I don't know, you watch him on defense, you're like, look, he's trying. He's just getting no extra coverage. His help side stuff is just getting broken down way too easily by the Bucks. The Bucks are way too willing passes, and Bam is no answers. And it was pretty rough to see. Goran the Flog Dragic, he started this game. He had 8 points, went 3 of 14 from the floor. Oh, jeez. I'd like to have a beer with Duncan Robinson. 2 points. Thanks for showing up, Duncan. This is, look, on one hand, Pat Riley's going to be super pissed that they're about to get swept, probably. On the other hand, he's going to be looking at this Duncan Robinson performance going, hopefully this knocks a couple of dollars off his contract. 1 of 6 from the floor from Duncan. 0 of 4 from downtown. Ariza stunk. This is what you get. This is what you get, Miami, when you mess with the Warrior. No, this is what you get when you bring in Trevor Ariza. Go, Trevor Ariza's going to be the thing that puts us over the top, and along with Andre Iguodala. It's like, I don't know, man. There's a reason they've been on a shit ton of teams in the last couple of years, and none of those teams have done much. 0 of 4 for Ariza after an 0 of 3 showing in Game 2. 0 points. He was brutal. Hero had 9 points on 4 of 10. Look, at least he got going late, but otherwise, not very good either. Iggy went 1 of 3 from 3 in 16 minutes, and they just don't have enough weapons. It's weird. Without Hero and Duncan firing, the Heat are stuttering. The Bucks end up shooting 13 of 36 from downtown. That's pretty bloody good. 43 of 89 from the floor. So they shoot 40% in the first half. They end up shooting 48% for the game. Pretty bloody good in that second half. Chris Kate, Middleton. He was awesome. In that third quarter, he just looked the goods. He's just hitting these mid-ranges. He's like, I'm going to get to my spots, hit some shots. We're going to be in control. And he was. He went 3-9 from downtown. Didn't matter. He was awesome. 19 points and 12 assists for Jrue Holiday. Giannis had a 17-17-5 game and was just out there causing a bit of havoc. And you're like, yeah, that was a half-decent game. Not one of his best. It's crazy. 13-5 for Lopez and the rest of the role players in the Bucks. Fighting Bobby Porter's fighting around the world was huge. He had 11-9. He went 5-7 from the floor. It's exactly the sort of dude the Heat were missing in this one. PJ Tucker, look, you're never going to see the PJ Tucker's impact on a game in numbers, but just know, he was flying around causing absolute fucking havoc on D, hit a couple of shots, ends up with 5 points and like 3 rebounds or something. But look, there was a moment in the third quarter where the Heat are like, oh, maybe we'll make a run. PJ Tucker hit a corner three and you're like, nah, this game's done. 11 for Bryn, your mum's best mate Forbes, 3-7 from downtown as well. Love to see that. He's still schmocking hot. Paddy Connaughton went 3-5 downtown as well. Dante DiVincenzo hurt his foot. Hopefully he's all right, but yeah, that was a bit of a rough one. Anyway, the bench went 8 of 18 from 3 for the Bucks. It's huge. Anyway, they got 3-0. Miami toast. We'll talk about them later. The Lakers beat the pants over Phoenix 109-95. Weird game. 15 seconds at the start of this game, we got a challenge. Frank Vogel's like, that wasn't a foul. It's like, Frank, I know that you're trying to make a point here, but you might want to keep that challenge for slightly later in the game. Strange first half. Look, it was a bit of a brick fest. 43-40, the Lakers had the lead. It was a scrappy defensive sort of game. No one could really get it going at all. Like, Crowder was 0 of 5 in the first half. Frank the Tank was in there. I'm like, oh, geez. It's like, it's basically, if Frank the Tank's playing, it's almost like Phoenix waving the white flag already. And the Phoenix bench, look, they were horrible in the first half. They went 1 of 6 combined. The Lakers bench went 3 of 12. So no one was really covering themselves in glory. But Booker was really forcing it early in this one. He shot 4 of 14. And a couple of those, you're like, oh, that should have gone in. Didn't. And he kept trying to go. It was not great basketball from the Suns. They were 36% shooting on a lot of tough looks. And this is the problem when Chris Paul has a bung shoulder and can't dictate the game the way he usually would, it gets a lot easier to key on literally everybody else, if you're the Lakers, and that's exactly what happened. There was a bit of an arm wrestle at the start of the third quarter, and the Lakers just had a big run. Blew the doors off of this one. They got up 15, forcing turnovers. AD, there was a moment, though, when Phoenix kind of got back into this, right? Like, AD tomahawked a dunk back into the backcourt. LeBron missed a dunk, and you're like, what is happening? It was back to 10. Phoenix hit a couple of threes. And then AD just kept smoking. Like, he had 9 straight. Lakers back up 17. Campaign hit a couple of buckets, cut it back down a little bit, but you knew going into the fourth, the Lakers, if they can pull off one more run, this is probably all she wrote, and that's exactly what they did. A 15-2 run from LA. There was an incredible reverse layup from LeBron as he sort of basically leant into Crowder and then just sort of head-faked him out of his boots, went right around him. It was amazing. Crowder was brutal for that game. He hit his first three with less than 3 minutes left, got them a little bit back into it, and then you're like, oh, here they come. No, it was still 2 minutes. They were down 10. Schroeder had 2 big buckets to keep their noses in front the rest of the way, and the Suns just didn't have enough. Booker then got tossed with a second. He basically shoved Schroeder in the air. It was pretty dangerous. Crowder got tossed for a bit of argy-bargy, talking some shit. That was his second tech. And Lakers, boom, go up 2-1, solidify the home stolen home court. Off they go. Booker had 19 points on 19 shots. Kobe, 1-4 from downtown. Just not very good. 6 assists, 4 turnovers. CP3 had 7 points on 8 shots in 27 minutes. Does not look right. Cannot go. Crowder, 9 points on 9 shots. This is the problem. No efficiency, no good looks. And when CP3 is like half a dude, he's literally got one arm out there, is what is going to happen, isn't it? Ayton, 22 and 11 with a couple of blocks. He was really good, and he's really shown something this series going up against AD. He can do it on both ends, but his impact on the game is still always just that little bit limited if the perimeter dudes can't do much else. Michael Bridges, that's the problem. Struggle town. He's looking afraid to shoot. He had 6 points, 2 of 5 from the floor. Doesn't want any part of this series. I don't like that. Campaign, he was the only one who actually did fucking fight. He was awesome. 15 points off the bench, 3 of 5 from downtown. Torrey Craig, same vibes as well, 11 and 4 for him. Actually, like, the only dudes who did anything from downtown for the Suns were Torrey Craig and Campaign. They were 6 of 10 from downtown. 4 of 15, the starters went from 3. And I keep bringing this up, right? Like, Booker, similar vibes of Brad Beal. They can score out their noses, but if they're not hitting a couple of threes here and there to keep the defense honest, big, big problems. The Lakers, only 7 of 28 from 3, but dominated the paint. They out-rebounded the Suns by, like, 16. And despite 20 turnovers, it was almost on par with the Suns as well. I think they had 17. AD was awesome. 34 and 11, just took over that third quarter in a way that you're like, yes, here he comes. Love to see this. LeBron had 21, 6, and 9. Again, just out there, the queen on the chessboard, doing a little bit of everything, crushing it. Even though we went 1 of 5 from downtown, the one that he did hit was such a slap in the face. It was great. 20 for Dennis. Should that aim German Rondo. Andre Drummond had 6 points, 11 rebounds. I'm going to talk about him again in a second. KCP had 5 points before he went out with a ankle contusion, which is weird. Because he kind of rolled it, and I think they ended up calling it like a calf contusion. It's like, what is going on? Kuzma only had 8 points on 2 of 12 shooting, but I don't know. You'd usually say 2 of 12 shooting, Jimmy. Is he up there for spud of the night? I'm like, nah. He kind of played a pretty good game. He was not bad at all. He was getting like weird little tips, deflections, played some pretty good D. Good to see that from Kuz. 8 as well for Wes Matthews. Went 2 of 4 from downtown. Gasol even hit a 3 as well. Everyone just did enough for the Lakers to back up LeBron and AD. And then AD sort of just brought them home. But that big run at the start of the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter, just game over. 2-1 Lakers. Then Portland hosted the Denver Nuggets, and they lose 121-15 because of Austin Rivers. That's right, the most punchable man in the NBA. Unbelievable. Weird game, too. Like, the Blazers got up quickly, up 26-20. And then there was an insane, I think, 17-2 run by Denver to take control of this right at the end of the first through the second quarter. It was absolutely remarkable. It's like, what has just happened? What are you doing, Portland? They were down 12, the Blazers. Look, they had a nice little run at the end of the first half, so they're only down 5 because Dame was crushing it. CJ was doing a little bit. Norm Powell was doing all right as well, but Joker on the other side was massive. Michael Porter Jr. was in a bit of a groove early too. Jermichael Green got some nice buckets earlier on. But the second half was weird as hell. Talk about a game of runs. This is like, everything basically was like on a pendulum. It's like swinging back and forth and back and forth. the big problem from Portland was having dug themselves such a big hole early, every time they'd make a run, Denver would answer, and suddenly Denver would be back up 5, 6, 7, 8. 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 points, whatever. And in the middle of the fourth, this is just where we kept finding ourselves. It's like, oh, Denver are threatening to blow it out. Nah, here come Portland one more time. They tied up at 91 because Carmelo Anthony went absolutely bonkers. The problem with that then turned into Austin Rivers going, ah, I see you there, fellow Knicks legend. How about we crush it together? And Austin Rivers went absolutely bonkers. He hit 3 threes. It was absolutely crazy. He hit 3 threes in like a minute 30. It was bonk. The Nuggets go back up 10. Dame hits a couple of shots. It's a 5-point game again. Dame just could not get any calls. It was ridiculous. Austin Rivers hits another three. And even heat checked it with less than a minute to go in a series tied 1-1. Classic Austin Rivers. He's like, you know, 5 feet behind the 3-point line going, no, I reckon I can hit this. Clank. Anyway, Melo, look, there was a moment where the Nuggets were still in this. Melo saves the ball for going from out of bounds. He throws it to Denver and you're like, oh. He hit another three after that, but still no dice. Austin Rivers has 16 in the fourth quarter. They hold on. Despite Dame and CJ both hitting threes right at the end and Monty Morris missing 2 free throws, which almost put him on old mate no mates today. But Joker gets the rebound, puts it back in because Nurk had fouled out halfway through the fourth quarter. Game over. Tough one for the Blazers. They hit 45 of 100 shots. That's 45%, Jimmy. They also took 45 threes and they had 45 rebounds. A lot of weird 45 going on in that one. Dame, he had 37 and 5. He was awesome. CJ, 22, 9 and 3. Shot 8 of 20. He just need a little bit more efficiency from CJ and you might have this one. Norm, same vibes. He went 2 of 6 from downtown, Norm. Had a couple of nice buckets. Obviously, early on was cruising, but 2 of 6 from downtown. He missed a crucial one in the fourth where you're like, oh, he hits that. This game might be a little bit different. Melo, is it me you're looking for? Carmelo Anthony, turn back the clock. 17 off the bench. Massive in that fourth quarter. Just not quite enough, though. Nurk had 13, 13, and 6, but he fouled out, which really, really hurt the Blazers because anytime Kanter had been out there on the floor, they got smashed. So Portland went small basically down the stretch and got killed. Anthony Simons gave them nothing, 2 points, 3 rebounds, and that's kind of the killer. It's just not that extra dude off the bench. And if Simons can't have a game like he did in game one, you're in trouble. Nuggets hit a season high 23s. It's pretty good. Unbelievable. Joker had 36, 11, and 5. Great game. He was just uncannily awesome in this game. 4 of 7 from downtown. He's the MVP, and he's just out there proving it now. And now I'm a bit worried about my Portland pick. Michael Porter Jr., 15 and 5. He was really good early on. Austin Rivers takes over late, as mentioned. 21 points, 5 of 10 from downtown. Air Gordon, good game from him as well. His defense on Dame was just pretty remarkable at times. The fact that Dame can still shake free for 37 points and still hit that last second three to give them just a skerrick of hope against a dude the size of Air Gordon is crazy. Faku Kambatso was incredible. 11, 8, and 8. Nearly a bloody triple-double. Also saved the game, essentially, when the Nuggets inbounded the ball after the Dame three. Oh, maybe the CJ three. Right at the end. And they trap, force the ball out of Faku's hands, but he just gets a finger on it and taps it to Monty Morris, who then gets fouled again as well. It was crazy. Great play by Faku. 8-5 and 5 for Monty Green, Monty Morris, and Jermichael Green finishes with 8-5. Thrill Sap had 5 points as well, but damn. Their bacon was saved by Austin Rivers. Denver get home court back. They're up 2-1. Good on them. Crazy game. Crazy series. Portland. Oh, alarm bells, though. Alarm bells. Right, let's do an NBA Stereo Proof performance of the day, though.
That's not a knife.
That's a knife. AD, the Joker. Take your pick. Joker, 36, 11, and 5. He was absolutely remarkable. Was basically, you know, the fulcrum of everything the Nuggets did in this game. And Anthony Davis, 34 points, 11 rebounds, a steal and a block, 5 turnovers, shot 11 to 22. He was awesome. Took over that game in the third quarter, working in tandem with LeBron. It was beautiful to see. They win that game because of that. But I'll tell you what, for all the fulcrum talk of our man Joker, Austin Rivers, what? Goes absolutely ham. They do not win this game without him going completely fucking unconscious. in the second half of the fourth quarter there. That was insane. The Blazers were on fire. Austin Rivers goes, nah, the good thing is I'm the best player here, so you guys could fuck off. I'm going to hit a bunch of threes. We're going to win the game. It's like, all right, Austin, talk your talk. And then he went and did it. That was insane. 21 points, 5 of 10 from downtown. Austin fucking Rivers. Everyone, like Dame is like, that's a knife. And Austin Rivers is like, nah, these are like 87 knives. How do you like them? Everyone's like, fuck you, Austin. He's like, nah, too bad. Got a lot of knives. It was insane. What a game. What a performance. The Austin Rivers game for Denver. The dude was out of the league. Nobody wanted him for like a month and a half. It's absolutely nuts. And he's out there winning playoff games for Denver without Jam and Jamal Murray. Who was Spud of the night, though, Jimmy?
Spud of the night.
A couple of Spuds, which you don't really want to see in a playoff run. But obviously, I can't really rag on Dante DiVincenzo because he got hurt. He's going 0-4. But Cam Johnson! And Duncan Robinson, I'd like to have a beer with Duncan. Both going 1 of 6 for their the Suns and Heat, respectively. Were absolutely brutal. But Goran the Flog Dragic, 3 of 14 in an absolutely crucial Game 3 for the Miami Heat, is just, that's brutal. Between him and Duncan Robinson, to go 4 of 20, those two, is just brutal. And not helping. Not helping, fellas. Just not helping. Ariza throwing 0 of 4 on top of that as well. Ugh. How's that veteran presence? You know whose veteran presence you can get to shoot 0 of 4? Me! I'll take a seven-figure salary to go 0 of 4 in a fucking playoff game. I'll give you as much veteran presence as Trevor Ariza. Crowder, as mentioned, was brutal for that game as well. Until he hit that 3 late on, he was, I think, 0 of 6 from downtown. And he gets his feet set, bangs in a 3, gives him a scary go, but he ended up 2 of 9 and 1 of 7 from downtown. Brutal stuff. Lots of spuds. Spuds flying around. I think even Dwayne Dedmon was like 1 of 4. And like, what is happening? Chris Paul shooting 3 of 8. Ugh. Not a banner day for shooting stats. And for people not throwing spuds at the backboard. Who was old mate? No mates, Jimmy.
Old mate, no mates.
Who's got no mates today? Montrezl Harrell got a tech foul. He wasn't even dressed. He was on the bench. I love a good bench tech. Because you just know that that guy is being such a giant pain in the ass that the refs are just sick of their shit. And it's 100% old mate, no mates. As mentioned, Monty Morris was very, very close to the... did you call the red alert on Monty Morris? The bags, or the, what is it, the pillowcases of soap bars. But hits those two, well, misses those two, the two free throws, but Joker saves his bacon, gets the put back, and Denver hang on. Anthony Davis, though, I'll tell you what, he's not old mate, no mates. Andre Drummond is, because Anthony Davis misses a shot, shoves Andre Drummond out of the road, and then dunks over Chris Paul and runs over Chris Paul out of the after dunking it. Andre Drummond going, sorry, Anthony. It's like, Andre, mate, maybe you should be getting that rebound, you idiot. Unbelievable. He's definitely old mate, no mates. Pantsing of the night. Pantsing of the night was basically Andre Drummond getting shoved, but Anthony Davis going for the massive, massive, massive Kappa run, tomahawk dunk, and like clanging it off the back of the rim was just, it went so far back. He tried to throw it down so hard, it caromed all the way back basically to half court. It was unbelievable. I love it when that happens as well. It's like, I'm going to dunk this real hard. It's like, yeah, just, you could also just get it in. Just saying, like 2 points is 2 points. Layups count as just as much as dunks, Anthony. pantsing as well. So this is more of a meta pantsing because Jimmy Butler, before the playoffs, hey, man, I'm so fucking locked in, man. I've never been more fucking locked in. I'm a locked in motherfucker on these playoffs. He is currently a minus 68 in this series and shooting 30, 30, and 66. 30% from the floor, 30% from three, and 66% from the free throw line. Averaging 15 points. Oh, geez. That's a bit of a pantsing. Jimmy Butler is out there getting pants right now. And weirdly enough, you're not seeing too many articles written about how the Heat culture is just dominating Milwaukee or anything right now. You know, a bit weird that. I'm also just saying, Trevor Ariza just might be the mole. Everywhere he goes, he fucks it up. Who was better than Lonzo Ball today, Jimmy?
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. How about rookie Vuku Kambato? 11-8-8 today. Nearly a bloody triple-double, as mentioned. But I'll tell you what. Just the headiness of him tapping that ball ahead to Monty Morris was absolutely remarkable because it does kind of save the game. At the very death, it at least make sure that Denver control the ball right at the end. Even if they hit the, like they missed the two free throws like they did, they're still up three. But the fact that they had the ball at that point was far more preferable than not having it and letting Portland maybe launch another three or at least get a timeout. So Vuku Kambato, 11-8-8, he was awesome all game. Caused absolute havoc everywhere he went. So Kambato today, better than Lonzo Ball. Pretty easy, because Lonzo's never made the playoffs. Finally, we did one yesterday. Let's do a final Dickhead of the Week. Let's do it.
Dickhead of the Week!
What are you fans doing? Get a hold of yourselves. I know that we're all excited to be outside. If only we were so lucky in Victoria. Fuck. Anyway, seriously, the fuckheaded fan who tips popcorn and Rusty. The fan spitting on Trae Young. Spitting in this environment, in this economy, in a pandemic? Not only should you be banned from MSG, sir, you should be fired out of a fucking cannon. Unbelievable. And the fans yelling shit at Jar's family, that's just fucking low. Like, you've got to be a real piece of shit. Like, you can have a bit of heckling, a bit of argy-bargy, a bit of back and forth, but if you're just going to say shit, like, calling Jar's mum a B-word. Like, where do you get off? Like, what sort of fuckwit does that? Anyway, look, I get that everybody coming out of a pandemic, imagine living in a country where you actually have a fucking vaccine rollout that isn't completely fucking half-assed. Anyway, but I get that you're all fucking happy to be free, but just, fans, just pull it back. Like, 2%. Just that's all we ask. Unbelievable. Let's do some NRs right after this.
This is Cam Glidden.
This is Anthony Drimmick.
This is Mitch McCarron.
This is Jason Kadee.
This is Daryl McDonald.
Hey guys, this is Hugh Greenwood.
Yo, what's going on? This is Ellie.
This is Mark Worthington, or commonly known as Wurtho, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
And you're listening to NBA Australia.
You're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, let's do some yeah nahs there. Brought to you by thedailyliquor.com from East 9th Brewing. Look, I'm not going to say it's perfectly timed, but it's perfectly timed. Fucking lockdown, mate. Thedailyliquor.com is your only way to safely get booze to your house, and the best part is it's cheap as. The selection's incredible. The Dos Blocos sample. What is it? The Dos Blocos Pale Ale. The Dos Blocos X. Get all the way around to the Lick Pier Ginger Beers. I love the sample lagers as well. I've got some of those in the fridge right now. Either way, thedailyliquor.com, we've got a bunch of wines, cocktails, and beers all on offer. Nobody has to miss out. Check out thedailyliquor.com right now. They'll bring the booze to you. Don't go to the Bottle-O in a lockdown. You don't have enough time. You've only got 2 hours, and you don't. Every time you leave your house, you got to wear your fucking mask, which is bullshit. God damn. You got to wear a mask outside. Shut up, idiots. Anyway, don't go to the Bottle-O. Go to thedailyliquor.com. They'll bring it to your house. If you're in the Melbourne metro area, if you order before noon, you get same-day delivery. It's the best. And on top of that, banging the code Australia, you get a free six-pack of the Dos Blocos XPA. One of the world's most drinkable beers. You can put away so many Dos X's and turn around and go, holy shit, that was good. Trust me, I've done it a couple of times. So anyway, dailyliquor.com right now. Bang in the code Australia. Get a free six for the Dos X. Thank me later. You got playoffs all weekend. You've got a lockdown going on. You've got footy. It's all over. Let's get it on. Right, yeah, nahs. Jimmy, was that pushed by Devin Booker worthy of a flagrant? Yeah, nah, fuck yes. He pushed him midair. You can't do that, Devin. Oh, he's probably just angry that someone was double-teaming him. Poor Devin. Tell you what, the emperor's clothes on Devin Booker. Just saying. I really hope that he bounces back in a couple of these games, though, because this has been a very disappointing playoff run from Devin Booker. But it's also kind of to be expected. Very young, first playoff run, you kind of get in on the big jobs, don't you? You'll be better for this experience, but at the moment, you're not covering yourself in glory. I'd love to see, like, a really just fucking big FU Devin Booker game, right? He goes out, he drops 56 on the Lakers, they steal one again, make it a series again, and off we go. That'll be fun. Will it happen, though? Yeah, nah, probably not. Because Jimmy, Phoenix Dunsky, yeah, nah. Yeah, look, they were Dunsky as soon as CP3 got hurt in game one. They were just toast. Without a fully armed and functional... Oh, no. A fully armed and functional CP3. Jesus, that's a bit on the nose, isn't it, Jimmy? But yeah, they lose the driver in their engine, the driver of their, basically, of everything that they do, right? You put a bit more onus on Crowder, a bit more onus on Booker, and they're just not as good as CP3. And this is exactly what happens. So Phoenix are done. I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers win 4-1 from here on. Phoenix, though, look, as mentioned, their biggest hope of stealing another one is Booker just going ham. So it'd be nice to see, but they are done, just, I think, in this series. Are the Bucks being rewarded for not being cowards, Jimmy? Yeah, nah. Oh, yes, you better bloody believe it. It's the exact opposite of the Clippers, isn't it? Yeah. Because I think Zach Lowe tweeted out, the Milwaukee Bucks had internal discussions about potentially losing to the Heat at the end of the regular season to avoid Miami, but unanimously opted against it. Some in the organization brought up their 4-1 series victory of the Celtics in 2019 after losing to them in 7 in 2018. And that's how you do it, Clippers. You run through the tape. You take on the challenges. You don't fucking sook out and go, oh, well, we don't want to play the Lakers, so we'll tank out of there. And then you get stuck with the Mavs, a young and hungry up-and-coming team who are out there kicking ass, taking names. I love it. So the Bucks are 100% being rewarded for taking the challenge head on. They were completely emasculated last year by the Heat in the bubble. And this is how you exercise demons. By kicking the shit out of the team that kicked the shit out of you. You got to do it. MJ did it. Magic did it. Larry Bird did it. All the greats do it. You've got to do it, Bucks. I love it. Finally, can the Blazers still win this series? You know. Oh, yes. But Jesus Christ, Damon CJ getting burnt by Austin Rivers is pretty classic fucking Blazers. And look, Blazers fans are always, to put it nicely, on the edge. That's why it's literally called Blazers Edge. Like, they verge between crazy optimism and, like, horrifying pessimism. So a game like this, and it's like, should we blow it up? It's like, the series, it's 2-1. Settle down. And the problem is, Portland really missed a trick today by letting Austin Rivers beat them. That's, you can't do that in a playoff series. It is to be expected, though. But the big problem for me watching Portland-Denver is their lack of a plan on defense for literally everybody else outside of Joker. It's like, yes, you can try to stymie Joker. Kanter is out there just getting absolutely fucking smokerated, obviously. But that can't be your only, like, excuse, because Mallow's getting smokerated as well. Like, there's only so much Covington can do. You need Dame and CJ, just a little bit more out of them. You need a little bit more out of Norm. And they should be more than a match, I think, for this Denver team without Jam and Jamal Murray. But the Nuggets out there with an MVP and a heart of a fucking champion at the moment. Good on them. It's great. So, look, the Blazers still can come back, and I picked them in 6. I'm a bit worried about that, but also, it wouldn't surprise me if they rattled off 3 wins or if they just lost 3 straight. So who knows what's going to happen. But the Blazers can still win it. Unpopular opinion of the day.
Now look at me, please. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Now I'm going to mention again when talked to Chris Anstey about it, but and I mentioned on yesterday's show, I 100% believe that the way to combat shitty fan behavior is to let the players fight one fan a season. Just one of them. Because I think as I break down with Chris, look, this is a really good way of combating shitty fan behavior online as well. Oh, yes, Scotty from Narry Warren, you in the comments, calling Adam Treloar a traitor who cost him a multi or something. you reckon Scotty from Narry Warren's like saying the exact same shit if Adam can just rock up at his fucking house and beat the shit out of him? Fuck no. Same with that fucking idiot fan tipping popcorn on Rusty Westbrook. Do you reckon he could do that if Rusty Westbrook goes, all right, I haven't used my fight this year. You, me, outside, dipshit. The fan would be shitting himself. Of course not. There you go. So for everyone who's like online ragging on players and shit, like specifically and personally, I think this is a great way to fix it. I'm just saying. Spot the problem with it. Beyond the fact that if, you know, Treloar uses that one fight, then it's like a fucking free-for-all on him. But anyway, Outback Takehouse time. It's Friday at Outback, and you know what that means? Oh, yeah. 4-for-1 Icy Cold TGIF Foster's Oil Drum Cans. That's right. We're going to market it as Australian for beer, but it's actually basically horse piss. And when I say basically, I mean it actually literally is just horse piss. We flog it off to you Yanks and call it Australian for beer, but no prick in Australia be seen fucking dead drinking this shit. You idiots. Australian for beer. Lap it up, numbnuts. Only at Outback. And today's flame grilled take is... Chris Paul isn't even hurt. He just knew that he was going to lose to LeBron, so he's milking his latest playoff injury to avoid the blame of yet another early playoff exit. Only at Outback. Nah. it's a great flame grilled take. And I'm just upset about the entire situation of Lakers Suns, because it really, really did promise to be an awesome series with a fully armed and operational Chris Paul. Unfortunately, here we are with a banged up Chris, and that sucks heaps. Anyway, let's go talk to another Chris. We'll go talk to Chris Anstey. No Australian player watch or anything today because none of the Aussies are in. So we'll go chat to Chris Anstey and come back right at the end and do the previews for the entire weekend. Right after. Oh, how about this one?
This is Chris Anstey and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, before we get to Chris Anstey, let's talk about Knowable. What do NBA All-Star Chris Paul, NASA Commander Scott Kelly, and Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian have in common? Well, they've all got incredible experiences in their field. They've created audio courses to teach you what they've learned. That's right, they're on Knowable, a new app where the world's top experts teach new skills in bite-sized audio courses. It's like Spotify for learning stuff, and I bloody love it. The bloke from NASA, he teaches you about stuff that he's learned from a career in space. Old NBA All-Star, that's right, an NBA All-Star, Chris Paul, discusses the performance benefits of a plant-based lifestyle. Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian teaches you how to launch a startup. There's over 100 other experts out there waiting to teach you something new, so go check it out. If you're keen on learning some new stuff today, download Knowable from your app store, bang in the code STRAYA, get 20% off, get smart today, boom, use some Knowable. And now, let's go to Chris Anstey. All right, I promised him at the top of the show. That's right. He's the man who was made even more famous by the Netflix doco about him last year, The Last Dance. I'm pretty sure he had a starring role in it. He's a close personal friend of, Mark Philippoussis, Bob Murphy, Dirk Nowitzki. He's a man about town. He's the first bloke drafted out of the NBL. He was a trailblazer for a second, and he was a trailblazer as a trailblazer for a second at least. Then he went on to play for the Mavs, obviously. Two-time NBL MVP, three-time NBL champ, friend of the show, recurring guest, and now bona fide bloody author. It's Chris Anstey. Big Chris, what's going on?
You get to The Last Dance, and you're pretty proud of what you did over the course of your career, and you become more known for 2.5 seconds on a documentary. It was a little bit disappointing to be honest. But look, we're battling through another lockdown as we speak. We're watching the NBA. I wrote a book. It's the basketball here. The NBL's been great, and it's been a weird year, hasn't it?
It really has. It really has. Locked it. What is it? 4.0 lockdown that we're in right now. I think it's 4. Jeez. Either way, it's I don't like these upgrades. It's a bit shit. What do you reckon? I feel like we've gone through lockdowns before. We've had The Last Dance get us through one of them. I was really just waiting for like the Andrew Gaze Grey Mamba doco or something, just about like maybe Gaze's time at Dancing with the Stars, let alone his Tigers career, or just something. It would have been nice just to get us through this little patch. But unfortunately, all we've got is NBA playoffs. So It's a bit of a shame.
It's not such a blessing through lockdown. While we're sitting at home during the day, we might not do it as much as we can. We do have the NBA. The finals have been great. The playing games were a fantastic revelation about the end of the season, a lot more interesting. And you know what? If you're looking for something on Andrew Gaze, there's still that little Next Stars documentary on Gaze. That's not a bad one to watch. So, a little bit going on.
Love it. So speaking of Gazey, I mean, last time I saw you, it was at the Gaze and Copeland sort of sit-down Q&A you threw down in Morty Alec at the Sporting Globe. We've got ostensibly, we've still got the Giddy gig coming up where you've got Warwick and Josh hanging out, which is, I think, still time for on the other side of this Melbourne lockdown, which who knows what's going to happen with it. But, I mean, how much fun has it been putting these together, Chris?
It's fun. So something that, as I just mentioned, you sort of go see a lot of AFL and venues over the course of the calendar year. And I hadn't seen a basketball one. I just had the thought during lockdown, basketball is going to have to support its own events away from the NBL, and we wanted to see if that held true. And we sold out the first event with Gaze and Copeland, which, it wasn't a huge event. I think everyone there had a great time. I did, and I know you came along and supported. You told me you had a good time, so that was wonderful. No, we were able to get Josh Giddy to, in his only pre-draft function before he takes off for the Olympic Games prep and the NBA draft. But probably on top of that, through some of the relationships that we've built over in the United States, COVID pending, of course, we've got some very, very big names coming into town next year that we hope to, that we will. Events are a lot bigger, so we're getting into that event space in basketball. We think the basketball community is an exception, and we think that it's big enough to host these types of events. We saw Kobe come. His back was meant to come, and we're really interested in that space.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it was really, really cool, and I mean, I think there's obviously a sort of a thirst for it. Like, it was just rad just sitting there listening to Andrew Gaze and Lenard Copeland just sort of shoot the shit. Like,
that was good fun, wasn't it?
It's just great fun. Like, it's just a cool idea just to hang out and just go, all right, let's just talk. So, I mean, that's all we do here on NBA Australia, obviously. And speaking of which, and you mentioned the States and COVID pending. How's your daughter over? Is she still overseas?
She never left, but she's literally yesterday she booked her ticket to go over in June. So
awesome.
It's been a long, long 18 months since she committed to UCLA. She's back on court. She's been able to play a few games. She's been back in the weight room, and finally she gets to go on an aeroplane and take that next step in her life before basketball career. It'll be a great life experience for her getting over there. As much as we're going to miss her like crazy, we can't wait to shove her onto an aeroplane and get her to California.
Love it. I mean, it's pretty fascinating watching Shiloh, get drafted and go to Chicago as well. And like Izzy's obviously getting set up to go to UCLA. It's just really cool, right?
It really is. And Izzy actually went up to watch the WNBA draft with Shiloh, and then they've become very over the years. But yeah, it's just, I've been around basketball now for 5 years. Probably my daughter being a part of it. It really is great to see the growth. It's great to see the genuine support that the sport and the women in basketball have. It's been so successful with the Olympics for so long that it probably hasn't had the recognition. So I'm really grateful that in an era where a lot of our own kids coming through and almost the next generation of female basketball players here in Australia, they're getting a little bit more coverage and a little bit more recognition. So exciting for them, and great that we're able to sit back, put out in Melbourne, and be a part of it.
Love it. Right, you've got a book, which is awesome.
I do.
This is exciting. That sentence is pretty gnarly, right?
It really is. I never thought I'd read another book, let alone, but here we are. It was, when I look back at the reason I got into coaching was I had some amazing coaches, amazing teammates, and people that I'd been around for a long time who molded me into the player and person I am. It's why I got into coaching. And then through lockdown, I thought I'll share some of these stories just on Facebook. It kind of blew up. And enough people sort of geeked me up to write this book that I thought I might as well go and do it during the long COVID break. And It's done. I called it Tall Tales, What the Whiteboard Never Taught Me. It's a series of stories about incredible people and the lessons they've taught. And it's only, I'm not doing this to do anything other than get out to people who are interested. So it's only on my Facebook page. If you find me on social, there are links around. And like, I'll tell you what, I've got to learn how to build a website now and put it on. Look, it's been a lot of fun. It's been great sharing it with the teammates and coaches that I've written.
I mean, this is one of those things as well, right? Like reading about, you know, the sort of piecemeal bits that you had on Facebook and everything. When you're actually writing about your experiences with other people as well, like when you're actually putting together the book, do you sort of reach out to them and go, yo, did I remember this right?
Absolutely. Yeah, did I want to? I thought if I'm going to read this and prove the book, I better not be full of shit. I hope I remember it right. And that was generally one of the most fun parts, was reaching out to people and reconnecting with old teammates. And yeah, conversation I had with Donnie Nelson, you know, over in the States, we sat on the phone for an hour and a bit and spoke about the book for maybe 10 minutes and what I wanted to write about, but we just caught up. You know, it's been a fantastic thing. And yet most of it, you know, I was actually surprised. My recollection was pretty accurate, but then every now and again, you know, speaking to Sam McKinnon, he reminded me about something at the Olympic Games that I needed to add and I'd actually forgotten about. So just being able to put in and remember and speak about some of those things that I'd forgotten was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, well, also, I just love talking about books, right? Because I always just assume that anyone who's written a book, their entire process is sitting next down to a typewriter with a handgun and like a bottle of whiskey and just like stream of consciousness, you know, going hardcore. But usually that's not the case. And I feel like the way you've approached it is like obviously the very, very, very sensible way of writing a book, right? Like just nail down on a sentence, an idea, a concept, and then sort of bash out a chapter essentially, right? Like with a little vignette about like some part of your life, which is really cool.
It almost is a little bit of an extra step in there. It's almost, you know, when I speak corporately, there are a few little stories that almost become go-to and a few of those lessons, I suppose. So I wanted to get those lessons and then I wanted to tell those stories. And then the more we went through it, I don't know how it even came about with the, you know, the word and the lesson and the story, but it just happened. And then you're right, it was literally sitting down on a laptop with a beer and seeing what came out. And some days I sat there and looked blankly and a word didn't come out. And other days I'd have a thought while I was in the kitchen. I'd go and sit down and I'd be on my computer for a few hours just typing. It was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was great sharing it with close friends. And, you know, I spent some time with Cam Rigby and he'd always read them. And he's an ex-NBL guy and he'd send it back with a whole bunch of red lines and cross outs and say, that's crap. And then, look, just sharing it with mates as well was a lot of fun. And, you know, the first one I wrote was about my old doubles partner, Dustin Fletcher, who's an AFL footy player for the non-AFL people that listen to your podcast. But, even just sending it to him and talking about it and having a bit of a laugh out of the fact that he became a footy player and I became a basketball player and not tennis players, that was great.
It is awesome. It's like a weird sort of, what's the old Gwyneth Paltrow movie, right? The old Sliding Doors. Dustin, like you're both tennis guns. Dustin goes on to have like the world's longest AFL career and you go on to play in the NBA. Like, well done, tennis.
It was the whole concept of the book that, you know, both of us often chat about. There are a lot of people out there who he coach or teach to then tell you there's a certain pathway to become successful. And we like to believe that's not the case. You can pick and choose and do it whichever way you want as long as you do it in the right spirit and with the right work rate, and we're sort of living proof of that, I think.
I love it. What was the story that sort of got the most reaction out of people? Because I remember, like, even the, what was it, the Russian hospital one was just like a fucking horror film.
The biggest one, or the reaction by an absolute mile, ironically, was the one I wrote during The Last Dance. I wrote one about Luke Longley, And I don't think it speaks so much as to the quality of my writing as it does the quality of Luke Longley as an individual. Nice. And honestly, he's an absolute superstar. And I suppose he's one of those guys that's flown under the radar and let other people take so much credit over the years, both here in Australian basketball history and, you know, in his role you know, with the Chicago Bulls. And I just felt like I wanted to tell people how great and how generous he was and what sort of a champion bloke he was to me when I first landed in the NBA. And that one, by an absolute mile, was the most popular.
Yeah. I mean, there is a reason why on every Friday show of NBA Australia, we do have the Luke Longley Award for the bloke who just does their bloody job award. So he does his job. He always kicked ass. He was always great at it and just seemingly a legend. I also loved the Sean Kemp workout story that you had in there. That was awesome. But I think, like, the NBA draft one, I remember pretty presciently as well because, I mean, you actually just talked about Shyla Hill just, you know, being drafted in the WNBA, your daughter going up there to support her. It's like, it's such a different vibe now for, like, say, like, Josh Giddey's experience is going to be very different to what yours was, right?
When he, sure will. he might be in an Olympic Village for his. He might be playing an Olympics game.
Exactly. That's
it could be very, very different.
So strange. And, like, you're sort of watching it as everybody else is, essentially. And it's just this crazy, crazy sort of bizarre. It feels like reading it third hand, I just can't imagine, like, even you writing about it must have been, like, pretty weird reliving it, right?
It really was, and even up until the draft, it still felt surreal. And I think it was Mark Loretta who had organised this room at a TV studio. Our team had done weights earlier in the morning, the South East Melbourne Magic, and we pushed back afternoon. So literally my NBA draft experience was walking into a TV studio with all of my teammates in between weights and training on a normal training day. I was back on the training floor an hour after being drafted and working again. So it was very, very different back then. And, you know, even watching Josh's decision to sit out the year, and it was something that back then, because I was so new, I really wanted to finish my season with the Magic and everything done. And I got over there just a touch later than what they wanted me to. But, you know, in hindsight, if I was getting late advice again, you know, I've spoken, I was, you know, the quicker he can get into the NBA system, you know, I would have done that if I had my time over again. I probably, unfortunately, would have left the Magic a little bit earlier. It might have just helped me stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah, true that. What stories hit the cutting room floor? Was it mostly about, like, Gazy getting drunk and starting fights at Revolver or something? Or?
Not that many hit the floor. I do. I've got a whole bunch of ones that sort of got half written and may still come out at some stage. But it was funny. I was telling a story and I realised I was just going to win the biggest self-congratulator award because there actually wasn't a lesson. I was just patting myself on the back. So
how good is Chris Anstey?
There are a few more to come and I'll share them when I get back. As soon as I was finished the book, I'm not going to rife while I'm going to get stuck into these events. I'll tell some of the stories at the events and I may do another one. I may just share a few more on Facebook. But for the time being, like you said, it's a little bit surreal being an author. It's even more surreal that people seem to be interested in buying them and reading them. So it's been exciting. It's a nice little reward for my COVID experience.
Love it. So when we had Dally on the show, I think we came to the agreement that I was going to write the Dally movie. When I write the Chris Anstey movie, who are we getting to play you?
Geez, that's a question for you. Someone big and ugly with a limp. I'm not sure who that is.
Jeez. It is weird, actually. So, because I think when we had you on the show the last couple, you know, maybe the last time or time before that, you know, talked about how, like, your game would have translated beautifully to today's NBA as well. I still, like, sort of look around and, like, you're still a pretty unique player, right? Like, if only just because of your frame and, like, the game that you played. And, like, I still feel like you'd fit pretty great in today's NBA. But also, there's not a giant amount of people who, like, if we are casting the Chris Anstey movie, that could actually get out there and star as you, right? Like, it's pretty strange.
Yeah, I really thought I was a shot after to get back into the NBA. You know, normally when you're out of it, it's tough to get back in because there's a line drawn through your name. But after we won the 2006 NBL Championship, I was over doing some workouts and I had this really incredible workout with the Washington, I think they're the Bullets, it might have been the Wizards already back then, but I got to the hotel with the feedback I'd got from them, and Leon Rose was in town, and he said, I think this is going to happen. But they had to wait for the draft. This was a couple of weeks before the draft. They thought they were going to get a guard. All that couldn't happen was that they go and draft someone that would be in the position that I was going to play as a stretch big. And I watched that draft closer than I've ever watched another draft.
Sure.
And you wouldn't believe they got to their pick and there was some big Ukrainian 7-foot kid who was an outside shooter. I thought, no. So I didn't even need the phone call from Leon about 2 minutes later. Yeah, I was close to getting back. I would have loved it. I probably would have been better prepared second time round. But, you know what, I had a great time here in the NBL for the 5 years I was back. And, you know, I'm really glad I've been able to raise my family here in Melbourne.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense as well. Like, you look at, like, I think of somebody like Nate Jawai as well, right? Like, similar sort of things, like, where if you sort of get a crack and if you sort of struggle to make an impact, man, it can be fucking hard to get, like, back into it. Like, I feel like Mitch Creek's going to have the same sort of vibe, same with Rowdy. Like, fingers crossed for them. Again, friends of the program, recurring guests. But it's just such a fucking, like, struggle to get back into it, right? Just because of... You've had you've had a shot, and you don't get too many fucking second chances.
Yeah, you've really got to be ready when you go. Being drafted is a different thing. Yeah, Josh Giddey will be afforded a little bit of time because of how young he is and how he will continue to develop physically. But when you get a 10-dayer or a look at a summer league, you've got to be ready to go. Because you know you're spot on. It's hard to get back in, and you need your agent to place you in the right environment. Look, it's still one thing that Australian basketball doesn't do very... You've got to be lightning quick and you've got to shoot the hell out of the basketball. Mitch Creek's a much improved jump shooter, but you wouldn't probably call him a natural jump shooter at NBA level. He's an NBA athlete. You know, and that was Sam McKinnon back in the day, that he was... just wasn't quite there with his jump shot early on in his career, and that was why he was an NBA guy. So there are a lot around, and we've just got to, you know, young kids need to make sure they shoot. Unless you're Ben Simmons and you're a natural freak like that, you've got to make sure you're able to shoot the ball, and you've got to make sure you're quick as anything.
Yeah. Right, quick little bit of quick hitters on the NBA stuff going on at the moment, Chris, because, look, this is one of those rare times where we get you on the show, and it's going to be on that same day's show, so it's pretty handy.
The thing
that's popping off right now is we had a fan dumping popcorn on Westbrook yesterday. We got a fan spitting on Trae Young in New York and getting kicked out and banned. And then it came out, like, I don't know, half an hour before we started chatting, that the Jazz, I think, also kicked 3 fans out of their game and banned them for the rest of the season in the Grizzlies game. What was the worst sort of stuff that you ever heard as a player? Like, what was your experience?
Look, there's footage I'm not proud of after we won a semifinal against the Brisbane Bullets in, I think it was and all game behind the bench there'd been people heckling about mine and my teammates' families. And there are some things you just can't say, and it took everything in all of our control not to respond. You know, we're a game up. This one would close it out. So we didn't say anything. We got through. We won a really tight semi-final. And just stood in the middle of the court and flipped them the bird after the game. And just, I just reckon you just can't cross the line. We're here trying to do our jobs. Talk about anything you like, but I think the minute you make disparaging or derogatory comments about anyone's family or family situation, that's not something you do in the street and expect there not to be repercussions. So that's just a step too far for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, no one comes into your job as an IT consultant and sits there, like, you know, 2 meters away shit-talking and talking about your family. And, you have to sit there as an IT consultant and not do anything about it, right? So it's weird that we have this, like, it's fine if we do it in a sporting context. It's, like, it's bizarre. So we were talking on yesterday's show about how every athlete should get to fight at least one fan every season if they want, because just think about this, right? This has been a big thing in Australian sport this year as well. It's like, it seems like it's gotten worse and worse and worse, where online abuse, like AFL players, NRL players, everybody's copping heaps and heaps and heaps of shit day in, day out. You know, oh, you cost you play like shit. You cost me my multi. I'm going to kill you and, you know, see you dead in a ditch. It's like, what the fuck is, what is wrong with people? This is insane. And I, look, the simple fact, if Marcus Bontempelli could basically just go, look, I'm fucking sick of this, Gerald. We're on, we're going to go meet at the, like, Adam Barclay Street in Footscray at 11 a.m. next Wednesday. Do you think fucking Gerald's going to say shit online? Of course not. And, like, I reckon you get one each season. I think that also makes it very fun because if Bontempelli then actually sort of does beat the shit out of Gerald, A, no one else is going to say another fucking word, but then there's going to be someone goes, wait a second, he's already used his one fight. Now I can talk shit. It's like, oh, geez.
You've really covered the bases here.
Look, hey, this is what I do, Chris. I just think these things through, get them to their logical conclusion. This is my job. It's what I do. Because I feel like that's a pretty good way of circumventing fan abuse pretty easily.
And I'll tell you what, I'd almost support it as long as it wasn't public so that the fan doesn't get any notoriety from it. I reckon just lock them in a room and don't tell anyone it's happening.
That's all right. That's the key. That is the key, because you don't want to make martyrs of these dickheaded fans. It's like, well, oh, look at me. It's the fucking hero Gerald who got the shit kicked out of him. But anyway, some other really quick hitters. We've got the first round of the NBA playoffs happening right now. We've got the Sixers over the Wiz. Really enjoying this series because it's really helpful, I think, for the Sixers under a new coach, new system, to play a team like the Wiz where they don't really have any answers for you. You finally get your team back together. They're looking pretty good. That series is over, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I really enjoyed Doc Rivers' comments about how he's been able to utilize Ben Simmons as well. Literally said that if a team's going to play up and defend him close, he's going to, you know, get in the creases and find his teammates when they help. And if they give him space, they've found ways to put him into the post and take up that space and become a scorer. So I think Doc Rivers has unlocked Ben Simmons even more than what Brett Brown did. And, yeah, I think that one's asleep.
And I think so Aussie Matty T, Matisse Thybulle, who could be on board for a Boomers call-up, he had four steals and five blocks in their last game yesterday, which is absolutely fucking insane. Like, I can't think of a better menace for Olympic basketball than a backcourt of Ben Simmons and Matty T. We won't be able to shoot for shit, but other just trying to fucking score on him. That's all I say. But anyway.
Just throw Patty Mills in there. There's your shooting. We're fine.
Boom, done. Just play Simo at power forward and back. Off we go. The other series, Nets-Boston. Look, that's just a tough one with the injuries that Boston are carrying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I watched game one in full of that one, and that was their shot. And I thought they stuck around well. It took the Nets a little while to get going, but there's just too much firepower there. They're going to be such a tough out no matter who they play, because you'd expect them to score 120, 130 points at any given night, and to beat them four times is going to be tough.
Yeah, I think one of the two bits of advice we've had betting-wise all year is bet the over on the Wizards and bet the over on the Nets. It doesn't often miss, I'll tell you that much.
Until they make the overs 240.
This is it. And what have we got? We've got Milwaukee-Miami is the next one. This is a fascinating series for me because I think it's the sort of ass-kicking of a series you need to see if the Bucks are to be taken seriously. They're expelling demons, which, like, you've played in playoff, playoff series against teams that have beaten you. Expelling of demons is a real thing, right? Like, you got to get over the hump.
I think you've got to prove that, you know, anyone can say, it's easy to think you can beat a team until you've done it. It doesn't mean a thing. So, yeah, this is a really tricky one. And Milwaukee absolutely killed Miami in game two, but put on a shooting clinic that I'm not sure is replicatable. So game three, which I'm assuming might be finished by the time this goes to air, I'm fascinated to see what happens down in Miami. I still have the feeling that in watching them in game one and game two, Milwaukee might just have a little bit more this year, and that bubble might have suited the Heat a little bit more than what we even thought it did at the time because of the way that they're built and that almost army-like regime they have with their training and their togetherness that, On an even playing field, I think the Bucks might just have a little bit too much when they're knocking down that perimeter shot.
Also, the shooting in the bubble, right? So we remember, like, think about the shooting in the bubble. You're in an empty gym, and when you got shooters like Miami do, they can get going. And when you've suddenly got a crowd there, the space is a bit different. Yeah, it might throw you off your game. And I think we're seeing that a little bit. Knicks Hawks might be the most fun series of the first round. This is your old mucker, Leon Rose, his team. What a success, Chris!
I'll tell you what, he'll never not have a job in the NBA, really, after what he's been able to do at the Knicks. But I really want the Knicks to win a series for Leon, if for no other reason. He's brought great people into the program. Yeah, he and a lot of other people, of course, have been able to turn that around probably 2 years quicker than anyone even thought was possible. I mean, they were picked to finish last in the East by a lot of people this year. And look, Atlanta is still going to be tough. They have probably got more scoring punch than what the Knicks do, but the Knicks are gritty. They've got to find a way to win one of game three or four in Atlanta, I think, to be alive. But, you know, coming back to New York 3-1 down will be a tough ask. But I'm barracking for them. I'm hoping that the defense holds up. I'm hoping Trae Young doesn't get going on his home floor for two games in a row. But, look, it's been incredible to watch. And just the scenes at the Garden with the crowd were
awesome.
Incredible.
It's pretty crazy to think. I'm not entirely sure, like, how widely known this is, though, that Leon Rose was your agent and you were his first NBA client, right?
Yeah, I was. He represented Rick Brunson.
That's right.
At the Adelaide 36ers before Rick had his NBA shot. So I had a phone call from Mike Dunlap saying that there was an agent that he trusted. You know, I wouldn't be shuffled behind a whole bunch of big-name NBA guys. And he'd do a great job for me. And Leon flew all the way around the world from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to come and visit with me in Melbourne. He didn't offer me anything that he didn't believe, and I could tell right from speaking at the start he wasn't full of shit.
Awesome.
So I signed with him on the spot, and you know, he went on to have guys like LeBron James, Allen Iverson. He took over CAA sports management, and now he's the president of the New York Knicks. If this lockdown goes too much longer, the next phone call he gets might be looking for a job.
Love it. Out of the West, Jazz Grizzlies is pretty fun. I just love a young, hungry team like the Grizzlies, and we've got Jingles on the other side, so that's a fun series. Who do you reckon comes out of that one?
I think the Jazz do. They've got too much. Even in watching Memphis play the Golden State Warriors, it wasn't the Warriors at their best. They're gritty. They fight. I just don't think they've got enough. I think the Jazz go and roll through the rest of this series.
Yeah, checks out. Lakers-Suns, we've got a 7-2. Do you reckon you get a 7-2 upset, though, without CP3 at 100%?
No, it's still the Lakers, isn't it? I'll tell you what, it's going to be an interesting. I'd love to see a Game 7. This might be the one that gets there. Phoenix are better than what people think. I don't think it's just a given that the Lakers win this, but every game that goes on, LeBron and AD get more comfortable. They get a little bit more cohesive. So I think the Lakers will find a way to get through this one.
Yeah, it was tough watching that game too. And you're like, oh, wait, that's right. AD and LeBron are still good. Oh, jeez. Portland-Denver, this is a pretty good one because I think the playing field got really leveled with no Jamal Murray. And I think that kind of leaves Denver with probably one punch too few, I think, to really keep up with someone like Portland, whose offense just can blow you off the floor at any given moment. I reckon it's really fun, though, Portland-Denver.
It really is. And you know, I'd probably disagree. I think Denver might still be good enough to win this. So they're a little bit, a few more tricks in their bag. How much fun is it watching Damian Lillard play? I mean, that second quarter he had in game two was insane.
Unreal.
Where he's shot making from is out of this world, and it's just it's a fun series to watch for basketball people. But the same thing, the way Nikola Jokic reads the game, not having Murray hurts, of course, but they're going to play make through him off the elbows now. I don't think they're going to put him in the block, and I think you'll see Jokic be a lot more aggressive offensively. And you know, last game, would he have 35 points, and he did it quite comfortably. I think he's going to be a handful, and I just have a little sneaky feeling they might be able to get the Trailblazers.
They might, like, this is the thing, like, they might be good enough to still do it. It's going to really depend on, like, Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon, Aaron Air Gordon, actually sort of stepping up and you know, providing a little bit of extra scoring as well, because their backcourt is essentially what, Monty Morris, Facu Campazzo, and Austin Rivers.
I think the most important job Aaron Gordon might be to defend Damian Lillard the rest of this series. Yeah. I just have a feeling that that's going to be a constant from here on in.
Fascinating. And your Mavs, 2-0 up on the Clippers.
I love it.
I don't want to jinx it, though, because, look, we did have a great year on the show yesterday, talking about how this is when the Clippers then send Mook Morris to try and hurt Luka, the same thing they did last year. So fingers crossed this doesn't happen. I'm loving it, though. Like, can your Mavs make sure they win 2 out of the next 5 games, Chris? That's all they need to do now.
I think they can. I like the way they're playing. I like the way they're spacing the floor. I love watching Luka. The Clippers take a bunch of contested shots and they play a lot of ISO ball. And I'm not sure that's a sustainable way to win 4 out of 5 games. I just think they can.
Yep. I love it. I'm so here for it, because it's the karma for the Clippers of tanking out of the Lakers side of the bracket, and the Clippers talking a whole bunch of shit, and then boom, they run the meat grinder of the Mavs.
It's such a Clippers thing to do, isn't it?
It's so clippery. Right, 2 really quick last ones. MVP, who you got, Joker, Embiid, or Steph?
It has to be Joker. It's been him all year. Steph Curry's been incredible. Embiid missed too many games. I just think it has to be Joker.
Yep. And, actually, I've got another one there. Ben Simmons or Rudy Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year?
You know what? I think it might be Ben. I think people might be a little fatigued of voting for Rudy. He's been exceptional, and I'd love to see it. It's an award I know he's been after and I know he wants. I think he might get it this year. I don't think it will go to Gobert.
Oh, here's hoping, because I've got a lot of money riding on that. and finally, who's your pick for the title, Chris? Have you got anybody, like, looking at, you know, the first round, it's fucking tough. I can't remember a year where it's been tougher to sort of sit back and go, definitively, I think this team will actually win the title. Like, I keep going back to the Bucks. Like, if they cruise through Miami, I feel like they're terrifying. And
you know what I think's terrifying is we got a glimpse of the Brooklyn Nets trying on defense a little bit in game 2. And I think if that's the case, I mean, you look at the lineups they roll out and you think, if you're an opposition coach, how the hell do you deal with that?
Yep.
I mean, they've just got a different level to get to offensively, and you can take 2 of their biggest scoring threats away and you've still got an elite NBA scorer as a third option. That's just a luxury that other teams don't have. So for me, it's still Brooklyn. And again, I'd love to see Steve Nash be able to do what Steve Kerr did with the Warriors and win one in his first year. And the way he's been able to keep that group together with those types of egos, I think, has been a little bit underrated. But I just think, until we see a crack or until we see an injury, it's the Brooklyn Nets are favourite for me.
It's a good one. It's a really good call. Like, I do keep waiting for them to, having spent 6 years as a Nets season ticket holder and watching like all these weird iterations of Brooklyn Nets teams, I've still got like the Nets of my experience in my head, and I keep waiting for them to blow like every lead and just fuck up at every opportunity, but they just don't because they're too good.
They're just
crazy.
Too good.
I love it. Right, well, that's pretty much fucking all the stuff I've got to talk through. Chris, this has been awesome. We're just going to go to your socials to buy the book, don't we? It's on
find me on Facebook. I think it's facebook.com/ChrisAnstey13 if you're so inclined to type that all in. But you'll find it easily. Jump on, buy one, have a read. I hope you like it if you do. And there are some incredible people I've written about. And no, if you're a basketball fan, I think you'll enjoy reading about some of them.
Shit, yeah. And we've also got the Giddy event coming up as well in Melbourne, and more to come on that front as well.
We're doing plenty in basketball. We're trying to grow it away from the court. They've done a great job on the court, and it's about time that basketball stood on its own feet away from the organization of the leagues. And there's some incredible stories, and you were there with the Gays in Copeland, that need to be told. There's a great history. The more people that know it and the more people that supported it back in the 80s and can get back involved, we're going to have some fun nights.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best things about the book as well. It sort of really gives you a really amazing insight into like 90s NBL stuff as well, because obviously you being a part of the Tigers and the Magic, is really, really insightful too. So like if you're a 90s basketball fan like I was, like you get so much out of it. You're like, oh my God, this is awesome. You're just like reliving it.
We can talk about circumventing the salary cap already now. Then they can't get into trouble anymore, so we can talk about it.
Statute of limitations, Chris. I love it. Nice one. All right, mate. Well, thanks heaps for coming on NBA Australia. This has been great.
Love it, James. Thanks for having me again.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, how good was that? What a great chat. Chris Anstey, absolute legend, friend of the show, recurring guest. Always just a good hang. Just a really good hang. The book is awesome. All the stories are amazing. Go check it out, as mentioned, on his Facey, and you can order it through there. It's really, really good. Trust me, I've read heaps of it. And there's like not one of the stories that you don't get something from, which is pretty fucking remarkable, and really, like, you just end up learning so much. So go check it out. It's really good. Right, let's do some game previews for the weekend. We might do a very quick Patty Mills Game Day Baller Game Day Twitter check-in as well. What do you reckon? Because I think we've got a Jinglin' Joe Ingles tweet about his mate over there in Utah. Not a guy, you know, yelling racist shit, but his buddy. Jordan Jeremy Clarkson. Because Jingles yesterday tweeted out, awesome moment. Former guy, add Jordan Clarkson's prayer hands emoji, prayer hands emoji, prayer hands emoji, hashtag six. Love it. Because Jingles and Jordan Jeremy Clarkson were showing off the hardware in front of the home crowd. Love it. It's very, very cool. Jingles being so happy for Jordan Jeremy Clarkson snagging his rightful Sixth Man of the Year award is very, very inspiring and very classically Joe. I love it. And yes, I've already made my arguments about Joe. He started too many games anyway. I can't get too many out of shape. Let's do some playoff previews. That's right. Game 3 is coming at the Wazoo this weekend. Can't wait.
Game previews. Game previews.
Oh, thanks, Inadvertent Bane.
Not a problem, Jimmy. Excited for the weekend in lockdown?
Yeah, look. Beers stocked up. Food stocked up. Got a bunch of toilet paper. We're laughing. It's almost like I fucking saw into the future. I got one of those boxes of the Who Gives a Crap toilet paper delivered like a week and a half ago, so we're laughing. No panic buying for Jimmy! Woo! Right, today we went 1-3 on the picks because we got fucked by the Blazers, and I thought Miami would put up a fight, but they did not. In fact, they did not. So we're 11 of 19 so far in the playoffs. The game's on the weekend. Tomorrow we've got a 9 a.m. start with the Knicks versus Atlanta. Atlanta, I think this is the game. Look, Atlanta really, by all rights, should be up 2-0 on New York right now. Instead, they go ice cold in two different parts of that game too. Now they go home in front of their own crowd. No one's fucking spitting on Trae Young or chanting that he's balding. And I think Atlanta's offensive game just clicks in a little bit more. Atlanta win this one, and we've got ourselves a really fun series. Look, this is going to go 7. Atlanta are going to win one of these two regardless at home. I think they win this first one. They're 4.5-point favorites. I think I take Atlanta to cover that. I think they'll be fine and romp it in. Boston hosts Brooklyn. I think this is the game where Boston makes it very, very close. A little bit of a last gasp effort. I think they still lose, but it's a very close game. And we get like a Kyrie or KD classic sort of go-ahead shot late. Boston plus 7.5. I think I take Boston to cover at home. They've got probably just a little bit too much pride to really just get flat-out shit-pumped and go down 3-0, don't they? So I'll take Boston plus 7.5. Finally, Clippers tomorrow. This is at 11:30 at Dallas. Can Dallas go up 3-0? I'm going to go with the Clippers stealing one in Dallas and putting the onus on Dallas to win the game 4 in Texas on Monday. But I think the Clippers will get this one. I think we get a really big Paul George and Kawhi game. And I think it'll be their role players just sort of just showing up just a little bit more than they have in the first two games, which has been zero anyway. There's a couple of pretty obvious moves they can make. It's playing Serge more, and hopefully he's feeling healthy enough to play a bit more. It's sicking Paul George and Kawhi onto Luka a little bit more rather than Pat Bev. It's getting Rondo out there probably even a little bit more, which is weird to say, but here we are. And I think the Clippers get this one, so give me the Clippers minus 2.5. Sunday, we got Milwaukee at Miami on at 3:30 in the morning. Jesus, Miami 4.5-point favorites here. No, 4.5-point underdogs, obviously. What do you reckon? Can Miami stave off the sweep and give them the old gentleman sweep? Or Milwaukee just going to take out the brooms and go to work? I'm going with Milwaukee. going absolutely hammer and tongs, exercising the demons, kicking the shit out of Miami again. Give me Milwaukee minus 4.5. Denver at Portland. I've got the Blazers winning this one and evening this season, the series back up 2-2. They're 3.5-point favorites at home. I'm going to take that again. I think we've got to have the game where, look, the big problem for Portland is most of the offensive stuff clicked today until it didn't, but I still think they can back it up and have a similar sort of game there at home and beat Denver in this one. So give me Portland minus 3.5. That's at 6 a.m. Philly, Washington's at 9 a.m. I think Big Simo, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. Oh, Box Hill Benny will have another good game. I think they beat the pants over Washington in Washington. Philly are only 5.5-point favorites at the moment against Washington. I'm taking that in a heartbeat. I think they easily win this one. The Washington, like, the home court for Washington, not great. Like, Rusty, if he's a little bit hobbled, I reckon he'll bounce back and have a really good game. But outside of Rusty and Beal, they just don't have enough weapons. We'll probably get a big Bertans game, but I think Philly will be able to withstand that, and off they go. 5.5-point favorites, I'll take Philly. Memphis then host Utah at 11:30 that morning on Sunday. 5.5-point underdogs at home. I'm taking Memphis. They fight. And at home, I think they cover that, if not win it outright. Utah are the better team. Memphis have more heart. I'm going to take Memphis plus 5.5 there. Monday, we've got New York City, Atlanta, game 4 at 3 a.m. Look, we might do a Sunday night show again this week. Who knows? But if we don't, I'm taking the Knicks in game 4 against Atlanta, having taken Atlanta in game 3. The Lakers host Phoenix. We actually have a line for this, 6.5 points. I'm going to take the Lakers again at home to go up 3-1. Look, if they do have 2 days in between game 3 and 4, Phoenix and L.A., maybe Chris Paul feels a little bit better. Even then, he's not going to be 100%, and I can't trust it. So I'm going to take the Lakers minus 6.5. I think this will be a closer game, though. I think the Lakers just cover that. Brooklyn go to Boston. This will be game 4, and I think Brooklyn take care of business and sweep Boston. That's at 9 a.m. Lakers-Phoenix at 5:30. That's a punish. And then finally, Dallas. I think they beat the Clippers at home and take a 3-1 lead. That's at 11:30 on Monday. Boom. Check it out. Don't forget to go to dkng.co/Straya. Get around some daily fantasy. Playoff daily fantasy is absolutely awesome. You get so much more invested in like what the players are doing. It's radical. So dkng.co/Straya. Get right around it. Create an account. Make your deposit. Play to your heart's content. Don't be a dickhead. It's awesome. And we'll wrap all those up for you on Monday if we don't do a Monday night show. Or Sunday night show. How's that sound? Good? Good. All right. Rad week. Fun week. Apart from the fact that we're in lockdown, I've had a very fun week. It's been a great week of basketball because the playoffs are here. Playoffs. Huge thanks to Big Chris Anstey for coming on today's show. Great to have him on again. Love chatting to Chris. He's a font of knowledge. A fount of knowledge? Whatever. And really fun just to talk shit about, you know, with... Talk about shit with there. Go use your words, Jimmy. Jesus. Anyway, we are back on either Sunday or Monday to wrap up all the action from the weekend for you. So follow NBA Straight on Twitter, on Facey and IG. We'll have something on there about it. Get around NBAStraight.com/shop, buy some merch. Get around World Wrestling Straya over on YouTube with our man Adam. Crushing it at the moment. And he is absolutely doing great work on YouTube. So go check out World Wrestling Straya. Get caught up. All the Aussies are doing really well, actually, too. Check us a rating and review on all your Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever app you use to listen to NBA Straya. If you can rate and review it, please do it. Come on, help a brother out. Use the code Straya at thedailylinker.com. If you're in Melbourne, get a free six-pack on your mate Jimmy to get you through some lockdown. Knowable.fyi. Get 20% off there with a bit of Knowable. Love a bit of Knowable. How good is it?
Oh, it's pretty bloody good, man.
Use the code Straya. Get 20% off Knowable. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album Running Out of Time is out now. And also, big thanks go to all the other bands. Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Green, 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 and Dozers for all the tunes you hear throughout the show. Smash them on Bandcamp, Triple J on Earth, Facey, Spotify, Apple Music, however you listen to your tunes. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands. And we're closing out today's show with an old Cooking with Bainesy. And we'll catch you on Monday, probably, you dickheads. Love your guts. Hope you enjoyed the Chris Anstey chat. That was really fun. Good week. See you next week. Look after yourselves, would ya? And later, Hosen!
The worst of these. Cooking with Bainsey is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And now it's time for Cooking with Bainsey with your host, Aaron Bangers Baines. G'day, g'day, g'day. Yes, how are you all? Oh, look at yous over there. I see you over there again, Cheryl. Yes, we know that you love it. Oh, this is great. Yeah, g'day. Welcome to Cooking with Bainsey. I am your host, Aaron Bangers Bainsey. All right, so this here episode, we're going to whip up one of my absolute favourite Australian staples. You can have it whenever as well, at night, for dinner, after a big night on the Terps. It's that absolute Aussie classic. It is Hawaiian pizza. Oh, yes, that's right. I love me some Hawaiian pizza, and it's easy as to make, mate. I mean, it definitely helps keeping up this physique, if you know what I mean. I reckon I probably cook about three of these bloody things a week, you know what I'm saying? And also, hey, just for yous out there as well, don't bloody listen to anyone who says shit about pineapple on pizza. They can go and do what I tell every centre in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. They can go fuck themselves, all right? You can put whatever the fuck you want on pizza. It's pizza. All right, so anyway, Hawaiian pizza is bloody simple, mate. All you gotta do is go down to your soupy and grab yourself a pizza base. I love the spongier, thick ones, you know. Grab a thing of tomato paste. Now, don't bother with the fancy pants shit with basil or oregano in it unless you want to be like all fancy pants and shit. Because then you just grab a bunch of shredded ham from the deli. Grab a bag of shredded cheese. Now, you can have mozzarella, cheddar, home brand, whatever you want. Doesn't matter. It's just bloody cheese. And the key ingredient, a tin of pineapple chunks. Now, it's pretty easy to whip this bad boy up, so let's get to it. All right, here we go. Now, just whip your base out. There you go. All right, now smother it with the tomato paste. Well, yep, there you go. Smoother out a bit. Just make sure it's all over the entire thing. Now, dump your ham on there. Yep, all this shredded ham. Now, oh, get your fingers amongst that. Shove that to the edges. There you go. Spread that out nice and even. Yep, there you go. All right, now cover this liberally with the dead pig. Come on, man. You got to put the ham everywhere. You just need hoops and hoops and hoops of ham. Just make sure it's the nice shredded stuff, though. All right, now drain your pineapple into the sink. Or you can drain it into a cup and drink that pineapple juice, you know. What bloke doesn't like a cup of pineapple juice, you know what I'm saying, ladies? There we go. Now, fang the chunks of pineapple on there. Just put it everywhere, you know, just throw it around. And then cover up the entire bloody thing with your shredded cheese. All right. Now, we've got this oven over here. Just wang her in there in the oven. There you go. Just for a good 15, 20 minutes at about 220 degrees Celsius. None of that Fahrenheit bullshit. Now, sit back, grab a tin, and let her cook. Oh, doesn't that bloody well smell delicious? All right, now here's one we made a little bit earlier. So you can see once it's browned a bit on the edges and all your cheese is all melty and nice, you whip her out, you chop her up into slices, and Bob is your bloody pizza-loving uncle. Now, give it a sec to cool down before you chow down. Don't burn your bloody tongue because that cheese will be hot as buggery, eh? So, all right, now it's there. Just get your bloody munch on. And that is an absolute bloody ripper of a meal. The best bit is, and this will impress everyone, right? You can cook it whenever you want. Mates, the missus, kids, everyone bloody loves Hawaiian pizza. And if they don't, just give them the old bangers, don't argue, and go tell them to cook their own bloody pizza. Because this is just bloody delicious, mate. All right, how easy was that? Cool, there you go. That is absolutely unreal. Love me some Hawaiian pizza. All right, so that's it for this week. Tune in next week for a new recipe, and we'll see yous then on the next episode of Cooking with Bainsey.